before we begin the sermon today, thank you for this word. Thank you that it's a little bit different. And thank you for the cross, for Easter, and for the fact that it brings resurrection, it brings new life. Be with us today, and thank you that the kids aren't here. In Jesus' name, amen. Are there any kids left? Yeah, there's a few littlies, but they'll be okay. Yeah, they probably won't understand what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about taking up your cross today. Probably the most defining moment in history. Who would agree with that? Yeah? Yeah? For me, the most defining moment in history was September 11. I can remember that really well. But that didn't change the world like that did. Yeah. That changed everything. That changed the game. That made it possible that we could be united with God despite our sin. I want to talk about taking up your cross today. In Jesus' day, taking up your cross meant something completely different to what it means to us. In Jesus' day, being crucified was reasonably common. Today, taking up your cross, I don't think you're going to get crucified in today's world. Fingers crossed. But in Jesus' world, you did. I want to talk about the cross. Then on the next slide, please. I think it's Julian up back. It is. It's beautiful, isn't it? How the cross is something so incredibly beautiful. It wasn't in Jesus' time. So a little bit of history. And I'm going to just give you a heads up today. When I say don't Google things, don't Google them. When I say Google them, Google them. This is not red rag to a bull stuff. There's some things you shouldn't Google. You can Google the cross if you like. The cross was a Roman thing. There were lots of empires that used it, but over 500 years the Romans perfected it. They pretty much used it on slaves, disgraced soldiers, Christians and foreigners. Interestingly, they didn't crucify murderers or thieves, and they rarely crucified Romans. It was generally reserved for the people who crossed Roman times, or the Roman authority, if you like. If you dared to rebel against the great authority of Rome, you could be crucified. And essentially it was a means of saying, you go against us, that's where you're going to end up. You'd be whipped, beaten, sometimes worse. You can Google that one if you like, Luke. Wow. Or not. And then they'd leave the body on the cross until you died, which took between 6 hours and 4 days. And then they'd leave you up for a few days so everybody could see you. They did an experiment in the 1960s in Germany. Had some volunteers that they crucified. Rope them up, put them up on the tree. They found within 6 minutes they couldn't breathe. Their pulse rate doubled, the blood pressure plummeted, and at 30 minutes, they just stopped the experiment because they feared they might die. They put the body on the cross at eye height. I did not know this one. They put it on at eye height, so basically you'd be looking the person in the eye. So a tall guy like me, they'd dig a hole so that you'd be looking at me in the eye, so my eyes would be at 5 feet or whatever it might be. For someone who's shorter, they might elevate you. The idea is everybody's going to be looking at you. Everyone's going to see you. Everyone's going to see what you're going through, with the message being, hey, you behave like they did or you misbehave like they did, that's going to happen to you. If you rebelled, or one of your fellow slaves in your slave cohort, if you like, did something heinous, such as maybe murdering the master, you all got crucified. So if we were all slaves to somebody and we went and took them out and you had nothing to do with it, you got taken out. They'd crucified children and women, and old people too. So just imagine that a child was crucified, or imagine being one of the Romans that had to crucify a child. Sorry, just thinking of my kids. And we glorify Rome. Hey? We say Rome was this great authority, and that was one of their things. And Jesus took that image of that horrible, violent, gross, obscene thing and made it into one of the most beautiful things you can see. It means so much to us, but it was not in Jesus' time. The cross was horrible. So by the time Jesus comes along, you've seen a whole lot of your friends, mostly young men, but a whole lot of your friends have been crucified. And Jesus comes along and says, take up your cross. It's not a good thing taking up your cross. It's a bad thing. The worst way you could be punished, and Jesus says, take up your cross. Could you imagine, like, you'd have a marketing campaign, you'd have the team come around, you say, how are we going to get people to take up their cross? Let's tell them to take up their cross. This is going to be fantastic. Come and be crucified. How good's this going to be? Yeah, I'd sack that marketing team. I don't think it'd work. But what comes after the cross? Somebody? 3 days later, resurrection. Amen. That's right. After price is paid, after that horrible price comes the greatest reward you'll ever get. So if you're going through a cross right now, and a lot of us are, go through a cross, a tough time, and you don't know how you're going to get through, remember, God is not on that cross. I don't see him there. I don't see Jesus up there anymore. Jesus was raised from the dead. So if you go to the cross and you go to the cross with Jesus, what's going to happen to you? You're going to get through. You're going to be raised from the dead. You're going to be resurrected. And so I'm going to go forward to Mark 8 now. But before you do the next slide, Julian, I've spoken before about how Jesus' team was made up of Jewish kids, teenagers, early 20s sort of thing. They were young, young men. Not only were they young, young men, they were pretty straight men. They were innocent little boys. So if I, with my X-ray vision, look through that wall at some of the innocent boys who might be in there in Transformers today, they come from good families, they come from straight communities, and they're not of that Roman world. Does that sound familiar to the world that we live in today and that our kids are growing up in? And Jesus takes them through that wall there from Galilee to a place called Caesarea Philippi. Now, on the next slide, does anyone know where that is? No, the big gold tower on the right gives it away. That's Sydney. So a few years back on a leadership course I was on, we played at stayed at a place called the Pullman at Hyde Park. So on that big park in the middle there, on the top left, there's a little tower. That's called the Pullman. It's a hotel. One street from there, so there's a diagonal road that goes up to the top left. One street from there is a place called Oxford Street. Now, if you haven't been to Oxford Street of a night time, sometime when you're in Sydney, give it a go. Now, I'm warning you, it's not really something you want to do, but if you haven't done it, don't Google it. So as part of our course we did, we spent 2 nights on Oxford Street, on the streets of Sydney. And I'll tell you, that's a different world. I've written a few words down here. Poverty, drugs, alcohol abuse, homelessness, exploitation, beyond anything I had ever seen before. And if you think it's rough walking down the streets of Oxford Street, then you go down the side streets. And they are sleeping in everywhere in that street. They're competing for spots to sleep. Drug use, people being fed, people exchanging food for drugs and other things. Fascinating. Not something I ever want to be involved with, but I thank God that I got to see it to understand it. And if you're wondering what we're doing, we're essentially feeding the homeless. And the entire course of that I was with, they said to me, we know you're with the Salvos, you can go out with the Salvos on their food van and meet people. Enlightening. Now, when Jesus is taking his disciples along the road into Caesarea Philippi, if we were in Sydney and we were going along that road to Caesarea Philippi, where we would end up is essentially this next place. On the next slide, Julia. Now, I've chosen that slide very carefully because if I picked anything to the left of it, you'd see things which aren't appropriate for church. That's a place called King's Cross, for those who don't know. Yeah, if you don't want to know what King's Cross is, don't Google it. If you want to know what it is, Google it. But for those who know Hindley Street, think at least 10 times more of that stuff than Hindley Street. Not a nice place. And that's where Jesus took his team. That's Caesarea Philippi in Jesus' day. So for the next Transformers event, I've got some good news, Chris. This is going to be really cool. I'm taking the kids to Hindley Street. We're going to do some salacious things in Hindley Street. I don't quite know how we're going to pass a child safe, but Jesus did it. So if I was in Sydney and we walked down Oxford Street and we went to King's Cross, I don't reckon Chris would be very happy. No, we won't tell the adults, it's fine. So the place, this place, Caesarea Philippi, was a centre of a thing called Pan worship. So I'll talk about Pan in just a sec. And there are two key things there, the gates of Hades and the rock of the gods. So on the next slide, Julian. So this is where Jesus took them. So if you see the big cave on the left, that place was known as the gates of Hades. And that's a massive wall at the back there. Massive wall of what? Which they call the Rock of Gods. And all that area there is essentially one big area where they celebrated, or as you might say, worshipped Pan. Who was Pan? Pan was a half goat, half man. Pan was the god of fertility. And don't Google the rest. don't Google the rest. I don't have a picture of Pan up there for good reason. Don't Google it. But they would worship Pan there. And they'd have celebrations with people and animals and smoke and fire and music and other things I'm not going to talk about. And they called that celebration, interesting when you start looking at the origin of words, they called it pandemonium. And that's where the word panic came from as well. Googling, you can Google that. Interesting. And that's where Jesus took the boys. Gets you thinking, doesn't that? He took the boys to King's Cross. He took them to Caesarea Philippi. And it's not something I've thought about before. That's where they stood on a hill, if you like, watching it. Now, these are boys, by the way, that can't have two types of cloth in their garment. Okay? That's how strict they are. And Jesus takes them there. It's interesting when I think about how grotty and how horrible and how obscene that place would have been, about how far we've come in society. Or not. Honley Street's not that far from here. King's Cross still exists. Although they did have the lockout laws, which they now relaxed again, so you can only imagine how that'll go. We haven't come that far. It's the same thing. Next slide. So as all those things are going on, Jesus looks at his disciples and he says, "Who do people say I am?" Now you can imagine the boys here. The boys are there and Jesus goes, "Who do people say I am?" And the boys are like, and they keep looking. They're trying to concentrate on Jesus and they keep looking. They're like, "I'm embarrassed, but do I look? Do I not look? Oh, yeah, Jesus, sorry, what was that? Who do people say I am?" And Peter's the oldest, so he's sort of compelled to answer. And Peter says, "Some say John the Baptist. Others say Elijah." In Matthew 16, it says, "Some say Jeremiah." Jesus wants to narrow this down a bit. "Tell me, who do you say I am?" And Peter says, "You're the Messiah." On the next slide. Jumping across to Matthew 16. So this is one of these beautiful stories where you can get two accounts of it and you get two different interpretations, two different parts of the story. In Matthew 16, we read, Jesus responds to Peter. Says, "Blessed of you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on heaven will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." So this is a really interesting part, because this part is one of the key parts that split the Protestant and the Catholic Church. Catholics say, "On this rock I'll build my church," is the rock of Peter. Protestants say, it's on the fact that Jesus is the Messiah. Which one is it? It's interesting. So I looked up Greek words. Mike's got me compelled to look up Greek words. The Greek word for Peter is Petros, and the Greek word for rock is Petra. Bit confusing. Goes a bit further. Some people say that the gates of Hades, so we saw the gates of Hades before, the cave where assumedly Pan would go in at part of the time during the winter and the like, and then he'd reappear in spring and he'd do his thing and all the crops had come back to life. Some people say that the gates of Hades cannot attack us, or will not overcome it. They're saying that the gates of Hades will attack us, but we'll be okay. We're on the defensive, but the gates of Hades are going to come us, but it will not overcome us. But there's another thought. What if Jesus is talking about being on the offensive? And what he's saying here is, on this rock I'll build my church. On those people over there, that dark place that you can see down there, that's where I'm building my church. And that's where I need you to go. And the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I'm saying, build my church amongst the people. Those people down there who are with the animals, those people who are with the goats in the mud, in the horrible, horrible evil. Because those people need you. Those people need you to go out into the world. That world out there needs us. They're looking for something. They're not finding it. You go there, and on that I'll build my church. It's an interesting thought. And the gates of Hades will not overcome. They will not overcome the fact that God wants us to get out there and see those people. And then he says, and I'm going to give you the keys. That means you've got everything. All the tools you need. My entire arsenal is at your call. If you need something, you've got it. That's God saying, you go out there to those people that need you, and I'll give you everything you need. Next slide. This is the slide where the part where Jesus plays his hand. Next slide, Julian. And he tells them what's about to come. He says, soon I'm going to be put to death, and on the third day, Arnold Schwarzenegger borrowed this, I'll be back. And who responds? So it's not on the slide there, but we read in Matthew 16, Peter says, never, Lord, this shall never happen to you. And Jesus replies to him as you read, get behind me, Satan. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. Only a moment ago, Peter was the rock that he was going to build the church on. So Peter was the good guy. You're the greatest, Peter, I get it. And then only a moment later, he's rebuking Peter. Now, I've preached before about disciples and how disciples follow the rabbi, so they follow the teacher. So, whatever Jesus does, Peter does. If Jesus writes left-handed, Peter writes left-handed. If Jesus orders Coca-Cola, Peter orders Coca-Cola. If Jesus watches Port Adelaide this afternoon, like we all will be, Peter watches Port Adelaide. So, if Jesus gets in a boat, Peter gets in a boat. Jesus casts his fishing net. He's fishing there. Come on, you got to get into this. If Jesus heals somebody, correct. If Jesus walks on water, if Jesus goes to Jerusalem, Jesus dies on the cross. Yes. So when Peter says, never, Lord, is Peter worried about Jesus or is he worried about himself? Because he knows he's got to do it. And we fast forward a little bit and what happens? Peter denies Jesus three times. Aren't you that guy that was with Jesus? No, not me. You must be thinking of somebody else. It's interesting, isn't it? Peter don't want to go to the cross. Would you want to go to the cross? Remembering what the cross is and how horrible it is? And Jesus says, take up your cross. On the next slide, Julian. And then he calls the crowd to him. So, we're standing on the edge of King's Cross and it's packed out and you call the crowd in. Or you're at Caesarea Philippi and you call all these people in who are something worse that we couldn't fathom. And he calls them in and says, and you could, if he's calling the crowd in, he's not doing this quietly. He's doing this passionately and loudly. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Imagine him saying these words to a crowd. The crowd are busy doing their thing, but they're words from God. These words would pierce your soul. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? What can anyone give in exchange for their soul? If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation... That adulterous and sinful generation, or this one that we're in now? The Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, he says that in that environment, with the boys there watching. We'll go back to Peter. He said, if Jesus goes to the cross... Peter goes to the cross. If Jesus is raised from the dead, Peter gets raised from the dead. If you want to follow Jesus to heaven, I've got news for you. You're going to have to take up your cross. And you're going to have to go to the grave. Be crossed. But you get resurrected too. You get the price paid. You spoke about that price before. To pay the price. But you're going to be repaid. I did Google this one too, Luke. The biggest number in the world. It was a million billion squillion. Some kid had written somewhere on a blog. We'll rug with that. You're going to be repaid that much fold. That's how much you're going to get back for paying that price. So imagine a reward from God that's not just eternal life, but a reward now to live a full life now. I don't know about you. I live a life that's full of joy, of happiness. I live a life of, as the Salvos used to say, the blessed assurance. I don't have to worry about, I might be hurt, I might, heaven forbid, die. I have an assurance that it's going to be okay, that God's with me, and that no matter what comes across in this world, God's walking with me. God's there with me, as you read out of Deuteronomy. But it's going to come at its cost. If you want that, you've got to take up your cross. On the next slide, please, Julian. There's a whole lot of crosses, and for some of us, we have different crosses. I'm just going to read us some of the ones that I have to carry in my life. There's the cross of change. If you take up your cross and follow Jesus, you're going to have to change a few things. You're going to have to say goodbye to some things that you do. You're going to have to say goodbye to some friends. And you bear what I call the cross of the social cost of it. People might say goodbye to you. I don't want you around anymore. You offend me. And if you haven't experienced the social cost and you say you've taken up your cross to follow Jesus, I'm going to tell you, you're doing it wrong. Jesus says, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. That means you're doing it right. So if people love you, and all they ever do is say good things about how good you are, then you do the sums. I find that sometimes your mere presence can offend people. And you don't judge, but they feel judged. And they'll say, oh, you're judging me. Dude, if you only knew what I think sometimes. I ain't judging you. But those people won't want you around. You won't win. Just smile at them. That ticks them off even more. That's the cross of change. You have to change and not be part of the world that we knew. Cross of humility. So often you want credit for the things that you do. And you're not happy till someone says, hey, I saw you do that. That's great. Let it go. We take pride in things that we've done, but you don't need people to boost you up all the time. Jesus says he's the vine. We're just the branches. He's the reason why we can do things. So how can you be proud, yet we all are? I'm sure you've got things that you've done that you go, pretty proud of that. Yeah, don't be. Bible tells us that God opposes the proud and lifts up the humble. So if you're feeling a little proud about something, other than climbing Mount Shank, which I did with my kids too, and I found it very challenging as well. But the world's going to tell you, brag about your achievements. List your achievements. And one of the things I'll just say that I have resisted doing and I will never do is being on LinkedIn. In work, they tell me, you've got to be on LinkedIn. That's how people will connect with you. I said, I'm not doing it. And they're like, why? Because it's just a brag session if anyone's seen LinkedIn. You put on there, I've done this, I've done this, I'm a member of this, how good am I? I refuse to do it. And I'm not bagging anybody here if you're on LinkedIn. But if you're doing it to boast about your achievements, And the other one about humility, say sorry. Set the example. If you've mucked up, just say sorry. Humble yourself. I was talking to a fellow leader at work on Friday. And she goes, have you had a busy day today at work? And I said, yep, I've said sorry, I reckon, 5 times. And she's like, why is that? And I said, because I've really mucked up so many times this morning. I said, I read this bit wrong, I did that bit wrong, I told that person wrong, I told that person off and I should have. I said, I just said sorry. It was my mistake. Humble yourselves. But that's a cross. That's a cross to carry because the world aren't going to encourage it. The cross of mercy. The need to forgive others. Now, if you remember rightly, in the Lord's Prayer it says, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. So if you pray that, you are setting the rules that how you forgive people is how you are saying you'll be forgiven. Someone does something to you, I don't know about you, but all I tend to do is, I think, yep, I'm forgiving them. I'm going to get them back. I'm going to get them back later. Might not be today, but I will get them back. I will have my vengeance. What does the Bible say? Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. It ain't yours. God says, I'll take care of it. It's hard. Carry that cross of mercy for people. And forgive when you've forgiven somebody. How many times? Once? Twice? Three? 70 times 7? Yeah. That's another whole sermon about where that comes from. But 70 times 7, that's unbelievable. So if someone does something wrong to you and they do the same thing wrong to you again and again and again and you're going, this person's an idiot. You know what? If they do it a 10th time, I am not forgiving them. 70 times 7 is, you reach for the calculator, 490. Yeah, it's actually a figure of speech, but a lot. Forgive them. Generosity is the cross. The world will tell you to accumulate wealth, and I'm not going to get into the prosperity gospel today, but the world will tell you to accumulate wealth, but the Bible tells us to lay up your treasure in heaven where moth and rust can't destroy. And in my case, don't leave your hedge trimmer on the back porch for 3 weeks uncovered or it starts rusting. Yeah, just a little note to myself, I've got to remember to fix that. How generous should you be? Keep hearing about tithing, 10%. No, more. The answer to how generous you should be is more. I say to my kids, how many good people do you want to know in the world? More. How many people do you need that can help you in the world? More. How generous should you be? More. So when you find that point, you think, I'm giving enough. The answer is more. Give more. That's the cross of generosity. There is no limit to how much you can give. And loving your neighbour. It's a tough one because I gave a sermon once about who your neighbour is. You like to think of your neighbour as the person who lived next door to you. That's too easy. It's loving the people in society who, we'll be honest, aren't lovable. There's some people in society that grind my gears. I know some individuals that really grind my gears. No, I won't say their names. Because that's not good of me that I think like that. Think of some people you find it hard to love, whether it's an individual or a drug dealer or a convicted murderer or a child abuser. And Jesus died for them too. That's the cross of loving your neighbour. That's tough. That's tough. I've got some people I can't love. And shame on me that I can't love them. And that Jesus died for me. And yet I say, yeah, but he didn't die for them. We're called to love everybody. Musicians could come. I want to challenge everybody today on that picture and that message. I challenge myself too. Do as Jesus did when he said, take up your cross and follow me. If Jesus casts his fishing net, we cast our fishing net. If Jesus heals somebody, if Jesus walks on water, if Jesus goes to Jerusalem, and if Jesus dies on a cross, that's for us too. That's what he's talking about. And if Jesus is raised from the dead, we will be too. So every day, take up your cross. Reset yourself. Take up those crosses if they're there. If they're your crosses, take those up every day. They're some of my crosses. I've got more. And the reward is a life of love, of fellowship with God. It's the reward is a peace and an assurance that the world cannot understand. Have you noticed that? Yeah. We get worried about things. But the things that we worry about are not the things the world worries about. The world's worried about, where did I come from? Why do bad things happen? Why did grandma get cancer? Where do I go when I die? These things don't worry me. That's the blessed assurance that God gives. Take up your cross. Lord, thank you for the reminder that we get each year in Easter. Thank you for the reminder of that sacrifice you made. How we're called to take up our cross. How that horrible, horrible, obscene, ugly symbol became something so beautiful. Encourage us to go into that world that the gates of Hades will not overcome us. To be humble. To love. To show mercy. To be generous. To give more. And to love our neighbour. Thank you that after that cross, after that pain, comes resurrection. And thank you for that incredibly full life you give us all and that you give me every day. Take up your cross and follow me. And God's people said,